Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is American Farm Bureau economist Roger Cryan, who joins us to discuss the 2023 economic picture in farm country. But first, here's this week's headlines. Republicans have taken control of the House of Representatives, which sets up 2 years of divided government after Democrats held control of the Senate. Votes are still being tallied across the country, but Republicans have secured the 218 seats needed to gain the House majority. The final margin of control is expected to be in the single digits, much lower than originally anticipated after solid Democratic performances in the midterm elections. The news puts Pennsylvania Republican Glenn Thompson in the position to chair the committee headed into the reauthorization of the Farm Bill. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is listing the lesser prairie chicken as both endangered and threatened. According to the service, populations have drastically declined due to loss of habitat and fragmentation. They say 90% of the habitat the birds once lived in is gone, and only about 32,000 birds remain. Farmers and ranchers have fought for years to keep the bird off the endangered species list. Several groups and farm state lawmakers criticized the decision and said it would actually harm habitat by limiting livestock grazing and other management practices. And finally, Americans sitting down for Thanksgiving dinner paid more for the experience this week. The annual survey compiled by the American Farm Bureau Federation showed a 20% jump in the total cost of a meal featuring many familiar dishes. The survey concluded the average meal for 10 people would cost more than $64 this year, which is up from $53 last year. Prices are indeed higher, but once rampant food price inflation has softened. The latest Consumer Price Index showed supermarket prices rose by 0.4% in October, which was the smallest monthly increase since December 2021. However, food prices are still up by nearly 8% over the last year. Roger Cryan is the chief economist of the American Farm Bureau Federation. He joined us to chat about the economic picture facing producers in 2023. But we started our conversation asking about food prices and whether or not consumers have any relief in sight.
I think the best consumer relief that we might see is a slowing of inflation. I mean, prices aren't going to come back down. They never come back down. Slowing of inflation is a little ways out. General inflation, yeah, I expect to continue at a 5 to 9% rate through the end of next year. If the food prices come down a little bit, it's because they've been up more than other things. But I wouldn't really expect food prices to come down for consumers.
So as those food prices are at high levels and remain there and perhaps even go even higher over the course of the next year, is any of the increased revenue or increased money that is coming in as a result of those higher prices, is any of that making its way back to the producer?
Is any of it making it back? According to USDA numbers, in 2022, net farm income was up a bit, but it's not up anything like you'd expect from the increases in prices. Farmers are taking feeling pain with higher prices, just like everybody else. The fertilizer prices have tripled, and fuel prices have doubled. Their credit costs are going up with all the general macroeconomic issues going on. So farmers. We're a little bit better off this year on paper, but that really depends on, for individual farmers, it depends on when they booked their fertilizer, when they booked their sales, where they were, what the weather was like in their part of the world. There's quite a bit of variation based on marketing decisions and location.
So you mentioned some of the changes that we've seen in input prices and some of the other factors facing producers right now into 2022. Wondering, how do you expect those factors and the other macroeconomic factors that you're watching to impact the economic situation you think producers will have in 2023?
Well, one of the big things that's happening is inflation. The Federal Reserve Bank created inflation with a massive increase in the money supply in 2020 and 2021. They did that not only by lowering interest rates, but by also buying a lot of securities, including a lot of government bonds. It was really unprecedented. They raised the money supply by 40% in 20 months, which it's nothing like that's ever happened before. And now they claim that the money supply doesn't have anything to do with inflation. They're following a too fancy new modern monetary theory, which is kind of blowing things up. And their approach now to addressing inflation is to try to balance supply and demand, not simply manage the money supply like the Fed has done for the last 40 years, but now they're trying to fine-tune the economy in ways that just aren't realistic.
So what does this mean for the American producer?
Well, for farmers, that means, for one thing, they're raising interest rates, so that's going to be raising, that's already raising operating loan interest rates and cost for operating loans. Inflation plus the rise in interest rates by the Fed are causing long-term interest rates to be higher than they've been in decades. And as farmers start to face, you know, interest rates for long-term lending at 7% and 8% and 9%, and as the prices rise with inflation and inflation gets under control, we start to see a scenario that can look an awful lot like the 1980s, which was not a good time for farmers and credit.
We'll be right back to continue our conversation on the 2023 economic outlook with Farm Bureau's Roger Cryan right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Every morning, American corn farmers roll their sleeves up and start the work of growing a better future, one bushel at a time, with America's crop. A better future made possible by their unmatched sustainability practices and the extraordinary benefits and uses of corn throughout the global economy. And the National Corn Growers Association proudly supports and advocates for all they do, year in and year out.
Welcome back. A number of factors influence the global economy and the American agricultural economy. One of those factors in the upcoming growing season is expected to be the war in Ukraine and its impact on input prices. American Farm Bureau Federation Chief Economist Roger Cryan explains.
I think for global agriculture, the war in Ukraine is the cutting off of natural gas supplies to the European Union. One of the dynamics that some folks have talked about a lot, but not everybody is aware of, is that with natural gas prices through the roof in Europe, they've shut down an awful lot of their nitrogen fertilizer processing capacity, and they just buy it from somebody else, which is kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. What it does is it undercuts the overall supply of fertilizer, and that's one of the big reasons why nitrogen fertilizer prices have gone through the roof. It's because the Europeans aren't penciling out a profit for their fertilizer plants. Nobody really wants to invest in new plants when the only thing holding back European capacity is a temporary price situation. Mm-hmm. So that's been problematic. And there's countries all over the world that depend heavily on imported fertilizer. And when the prices get this high, it starts to have an impact on food security in parts of the world that are much more vulnerable.
So you mentioned a lot of the kind of supply chain issues, ramifications of this war in Ukraine, and especially with the production in Europe. But a number of other folks are really flagging price concerns that they're having across a wide variety of inputs. You mentioned fertilizer, but diesel also very high in price right now. Some folks worried about some of their some of the seed that they will be planting in the upcoming year. Price concerns are not new in this space. I'm wondering, are you and your analysts hearing anything in regards to availability concerns? Will producers be able to get what they need, albeit at a price they might not love?
We've heard anecdotally about spot shortages for a number of these things. All the industries, the fertilizer folks and the fuel folks, and they all insist that the availability is there. It's the main issue is price. Even the fertilizer, you know, the good news with fertilizer and the transportation on the Mississippi is that an awful lot of grain barges normally go back up the river empty. So there's a lot of room for backhaul, a lot of opportunity to catch up for fertilizer shipments back up the Mississippi before planting season.
So as you continue your analysis of the economic performance of farm country in 2023, what's kind of going to be the biggest economic indicators that you'll be watching?
I guess input costs are really the thing that are that are of most concern to farmers right now. I mean, if energy prices can go any direction you can imagine, and we're hoping that we certainly hope that there'll be some sort of peace in Ukraine, that the energy markets can kind of get back to normal, and some of those high costs that affect everybody, but certainly affect farmers. Farmers use a lot of diesel. They rely on diesel on their farm. They rely on diesel for moving in all their inputs in, and for moving all their input all their product out. That's a diesel is a big deal. So I think the biggest thing I'd be looking to is what's happening with diesel. I think that ag commodity prices, I can't imagine they'll crash in 2023. There's a lot of need for a lot of stuff. There's a lot of underproduction because of high input costs, and the Europeans are not very excited about producing food. They seem to think that the less food they produce, the better off the environment is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important. It's a highlight. The Ukraine situation, I hope, is a wake-up call for us how important it is to support productive agriculture, both in the U.S. and around the world, because food security really begins and ends with food production.
Last question for you here, Roger, and obviously keeping in mind that Congress and the folks on Capitol Hill are going to be looking at reauthorizing a farm bill into 2023. What would be your counsel, should they ask you for it, on how they should view the current economic situation in the context of writing a new farm bill?
Well, I think there's a lot of, it's not really my place to say what the farm bill ought to say. I think there's an awful lot of topics that are gonna be coming up. Certainly conservation is a major topic. Conservation should address, if conservation is going to address environmental and climate issues, it should be doing it in support of productive agriculture. I think there's a lot of folks looking at margin as an alternative to total revenue or to prices as a level basis for support. I think crop insurance is going to be increasingly important. The flexibility it offers has encouraged a lot of folks to see crop insurance as a real important part of this. And I think some of the things we've talked about inflation and the risks that farmers face for their credit situation probably suggests that we ought to be taking a close look at credit policies as well. So there's a wide range of things that the farm bill is going to have to address, and we're certainly looking forward to sharing farmers' concerns with the members of Congress, and we certainly look forward to a constructive bipartisan farm bill in 2023.
Roger, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pegel has a look at how a disease outbreak has impacted American turkey production in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
A recent wave of avian influenza has hit American poultry production hard. But millions of Americans still have enjoyed turkey this Thanksgiving. In fact, this year's situation is actually a slight improvement over a year ago. This chart shows the number of whole hen turkeys in cold storage from 2017 to 2022. The five-year average is represented by the dotted line on the chart, and this year's average totals are represented by the green line. According to USDA, the amount of whole hens in cold storage was up by more than 12% year over year at the end of August, but still below the five-year average. USDA data shows that third quarter turkey production totaled more than 1.2 billion pounds, which is a decrease of 10% compared to last year. The average weight of each bird was also 5% lower. More birds have been lost in this year's outbreak than the 2014-2015 outbreak, and this spring's wave of detections has carried into the fall. According to USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, more than 50 million birds have been impacted. Biosecurity protocols have improved since the last major outbreak, but containing avian influenza remains a challenge. No effective vaccine is currently available, and some researchers worry that improper vaccination would lead to the current strain of the flu staying in the environment and mixing with other strains. You can read more about the situation in Fran Howard's story on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pegel. Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are excited to continue our discussion on the 2023 economic picture with a number of leading economists, including this week, Kerry Siffrath with the U.S. Grains Council and Aaron Borer with the U.S. Meat Export Federation joining us for this week's panel. And we appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Aaron, I want to go to you first, because as we look back at the last couple of years of beef and pork and red meat trade around the world, the COVID-19 pandemic introduced a number of supply chain hurdles into the global economy and meat trade as well. But I'm wondering, from your analysis, are we still seeing some of those impacts, or have the COVID trade impacts somewhat subsided?
Yeah, you're right. It's been a long slog. And we were with our exporters, week before last in Oklahoma City at our board meeting. And I think that the tone is general improvement, but it has taken a long time. And there is still product that's sold sitting in warehouses waiting to ship. And there are still challenges that come up every day. And then there's just the lasting impact on our chilled business. So it's going to take time to rebuild that chilled demand, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Kerry, I'd be interested in your perspective, given the different sectors that you cover within agricultural exports. From the grain standpoint, do we still see COVID-19 ramifications, or have those slipped away?
Well, we've kind of seen a little bit of a changeover. You know, the movement of bulk grain via, down the river system or by rail out to the export facilities really wasn't much of an issue during COVID. Those kept open and flowing. We just saw some slowdown in container shipments. As the container issues, that affect all kinds of supply chains, were affecting DDGS and some of the other products that we ship out in containers. We've seen that container issue kind of resolve, not completely back to normal, but much, much better levels of both container freight prices as well as container availability. And now with the low water levels on the river system, the Mississippi, Ohio, and Illinois River, and a pending rail strike, now we're seeing kind of maybe some potential issues, or already some issues, with the river and the barge movement of grain down to the New Orleans export facilities.
Well, and Aaron, as we look across the figures on meat exports in 2022, obviously the year is not wrapped up yet, but it's been an extremely good year for U.S. red meat exports. And I wonder, do you think 2023 can top that, or perhaps even compete with it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a mixed picture for 2023, and maybe some switching, if you will. So obviously for 2022, U.S. beef exports have been incredible, at the clip of $1 billion a month for all but 2 months, February and then September. And on the pork side, exports had slowed pretty dramatically in volume, but we've been able to command higher prices. And that's really what set us apart on the pork side compared to our global competitors, where everyone shipped less because of China's normalization in demand. But our competitors shipped less at lower prices and really were undercutting U.S. exports in the international markets. So the fact that we were still able to command higher prices is just testament to the demand that we've still been able to find. And then, of course, the benefits of just having these diversified export markets, and U.S. is much less reliant on China than our competitors. So going into 2023, I think we see an improving U.S. supply advantage. Part of this is just Europe's production situation. So Europe's pig inventory in the May-June survey down 4%. Production has been running down 4-6%. And given the mid-year inventory levels, it looks like another decrease in Europe's production next year. And China's situation is changing. Hog prices in China are much higher than they were even mid-year. So they increased by about 70% since June. And so where we sit today is much tighter global pork supplies than where we were a year ago. And that can still move around, obviously, in 2023. But I think U.S. recaptures some of that advantage. And on the beef side, kind of the opposite. We know we've had drought-induced herd liquidation since 2019, and we're going to see probably a sharp decrease in U.S. beef production next year. maybe down just as much as 4%, but possibly more. And that's going to take the edge off this export pace. I mean, exports remain critical to drive profitability across the industry. So no question they're as important as ever. But that supply situation is going to tighten up here in the U.S. at the same time as Australia's production is finally expected to rebound after their strong herd rebuilding.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at agripulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back. The global grain markets have had a close eye on the Black Sea region over the course of the last year, and in particular, the last month, as the governments in the region were working to determine whether or not a deal to allow for grain trade out of Ukraine would continue. Kerry Siferath with the U.S. Grains Council says it's an issue that has had worldwide implications.
Well, it's obviously affecting global grain prices as people try to figure out, how much of that Ukrainian corn crop, wheat crop, even barley crop is available to the world market. How much of it can they move out? How much winter wheat and winter barley are they able to plant? It's affecting global grain prices. And as we see, Russia decide to join or pull out or not join, those things can have some major market swings even on a day-to-day basis. They've extended for another 120 days, so at least for the next 3 months, it looks like it'll be fairly open for Ukrainian product to move out. As we see, markets like Egypt, which is a very large corn and wheat importing market, and usually relies quite heavily on Black Sea, whether it's Russian or Ukrainian wheat or Ukrainian corn. And Egypt's gone through some issues of currency, where the government is really trying to control hard currency leaving that country. And so it's there for the poultry sector in Egypt to be able to buy some of those smaller vessels and scrape together enough hard currency to buy a 5 or 10,000 ton vessel out of Ukraine. And so I think the Egyptian poultry industry almost needs that to be able to survive the next 12 months. So, we'd love to have them being buying U.S. corn, but at the same time, we'd love to have them be around a year, year and a half or 2 years from now. So if that's what it takes to keep them alive, we're happy to see that. And then as we look into the Western Europe, predominantly Spain, as they normally are buying Ukrainian corn, Ukrainian feed wheat, Ukrainian feed barley, and how does that affect their corn or feed grain demand? Italy, the Netherlands buy some U.S. corn, even a little bit of U.S. sorghum back in last April and May. And as they work to figure out how much Black Sea feed grains are available and will they come to the U.S. to meet some of their demands the last part of this year and as we move into 2023.
Aaron Carey just kind of walked us through some of the markets that that they're going to be watching in terms of the potential for growth in American exports. You kind of walked us a little bit earlier through the general situation that you're seeing around the world. But any particular growth markets you're going to be watching in 2023 based on previous buying patterns?
Yeah, 2023, I think, will be kind of a continuation of what we've seen as far as strength across a number of markets. It kind of depends between the beef and pork situations. I guess the main wild card here is once again China. And this is partially due to China's zero COVID policy. And as we know, COVID cases are surging in China at the moment. They did have the optimization of zero COVID that was announced close to 2 weeks ago now. And so the world is watching to see how and when China might learn to live with COVID. And that's really important because on the beef side, especially, we've seen this strength in Chinese demand. But at the moment, we know there's been some buildup of inventories just because their food service industry continues to suffer from these periodic and sometimes sustained lockdowns and consumer fear to get caught up catch COVID and cause a lockdown in their community. And so for the beef side, you know, to what degree China's demand holds in, not just for the U.S., but globally, is pretty contingent on China's COVID policies. So we'll continue to watch that. On the pork side, obviously, China, the situation is really dependent on what happens with their domestic production, as well as COVID, which is impacting clearly on the demand and the supply side. So outside of China, Mexico remains just incredible for U.S. pork. We did see them approve some Brazilian pork plants last week, and that is going to have some impact in the frozen trade. Fortunately for the U.S., 93% of our shipments to Mexico are chilled, and I see us sustaining that business with a strong comparative advantage in those chilled bone and ham combos. And otherwise, for pork, I mean, it's been pretty widespread strength, and same for the beef side. You know, the currency situation is also critical here, especially in markets like Japan, where that weak yen has taken the edge off the beef market, but hopefully we've already seen peak dollar.
Well, of course, a number of factors to watch into the new year, a number of things impacting the global economy, the global agricultural economy, as well as the export picture for grains, for red meat, for all kinds of agricultural products. And we appreciate the opportunity to hear from you, you too, Carrie and Aaron, to have a little bit better informed picture heading into the new year. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel has a look at someone you should know in the D.C. Beltway in this week's Featured Farmhand.
Janae Brady came to Washington, D.C. to work for Senator Pat Roberts on the Senate Ag Committee after working as a teacher in her home state of Kansas. Using her educational background, Brady worked on the Senate Ag Committee and for Gordley Associates before her current job as the Vice President of Government Affairs at the American Seed Trade Association. In her interview, we discussed the lessons learned on Capitol Hill, including the one question a lobbyist should never ask a staffer.
Well, I don't know if it's a specific question, but I think it's really important for lobbyists to figure out where those staffers are coming from, how much background they already have on an issue, how much they need, because I do really see it as a partnership between industry and between congressional staff or USDA staff for that matter, but really trying to figure out what knowledge they need and then what you can provide that will sort of benefit everyone involved. And coming from my role as a Hill staffer in particular, I think we really needed to know who to call when we were having problems or who could be our boots on the ground or really give us the best inside track onto what we needed to do to help make their lives easier.
Brady also shares stories about her hiking adventures and the advice she'd tell herself if she could go back to day one of her career. Head to AgriPulse.com to watch her full interview. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The EPA's proposal for the country's biofuel blending targets must be rolled out by Wednesday. USDA will release its November outlook for agricultural trade numbers on Tuesday and will also release its monthly report on ag prices on Wednesday. Finally, the National Council of Agricultural Employers will host its Ag Labor Forum Wednesday through Friday in Las Vegas. As always, stay tuned to AgriPulse.com for all of this and more. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.